Hey friends, it's your pal Mike Shea from Sly Flourish. Today, we are going to take a deep dive into the adventure Shadowed Keep on the Borderlands by Raging Swan Press. I have done a spotlight on this product before, a year ago or so, but I have been running a Shadowed Keep in the Borderlands campaign for one of my groups, and I just love this product so much. There's really actually interesting things that are going on with the product itself, what Raging Swan is doing by evolving the product itself that I wanted to talk a little bit about. And I wanted to just dive in even deeper on this excellent adventure and bring the joy that I have had with it to you. This show, like all of the work of Sly Flourish, is brought to you by the patrons of Sly Flourish. Patrons get access to all kinds of exclusive features like a dedicated Discord server, a monthly Q&A, a bunch of exclusive adventures, the City of Arches sourcebook, Uncovered Secrets Volume 1 and 2, and a whole bunch of tools to help you run your tabletop role-playing games. It's a really good deal. And to the patrons of Sly Flourish, thank you so much for your outstanding support. So Shadowed Keep of the Borderlands is an adventure. It is available on DriveThruRPG or on the Raging Swan website. Right now it's $12. It's actually a pretty good time to buy it because Crichton from Raging Swan is actually going to be expanding the adventure. I talked to him about this. He's going to be expanding the adventure, and when he does, the price is going to go up with all of the added stuff that he's adding to it. But if you buy it now, you will get the additions of those new features for the price that you pick it up today. So not only do you want to pick it up, and you really do, it's a really outstanding adventure, but you want to pick it up now because it's going to get better as you go. We're going to talk more about how he is expanding Shadowed Keep of the Borderlands as a product, but it's really neat. So what is Shadowed Keep in the Borderlands? Shadowed Keep in the Borderlands is a 125-page adventure for either 5th edition or Pathfinder or OSR. I have the 5th edition version, and it is a classic style adventure, like a classic, you know, old school D&D style adventure, but heavily refined in how he has designed it to be extremely table usable. I have not run any adventure that has been as table usable as this, like an adventure that is written for GMs to sit down and run at the table, giving you the resources you need, just the right amount of words, just the right amount of stuff, you know, cool maps, all the stuff you need to run an adventure is in this book. It is really, really excellent. The version that I am looking at right now is actually the early 2024 edition. This is going to be available on the, if you bought it from DriveThruRPG or you bought it from Raging Swan, the version that you will be able to download in a few days from the time I'm recording this, which by the time this video goes out, it should be out, is the early 2024 edition, which has had some newer stuff in. I think that the things that were mainly added are more adventures taking place in the town of Dulwich itself. I think I've got that right. But the interesting thing is it is an evolving adventure. And is that what I want to talk about? Table use. Yeah, continually evolving product. So Crichton from Raging Swan has an article where he talks about how he is continually evolving this adventure and talks about actually having sort of a roadmap of the things that he wants to do with it. Shadowed Keep in late 2023, adventure available on OSR. Early 2024, the Dulwich section is going to expand in the inclusion of mini adventures. Late 2024, there's a version in October coming out. I thought I heard him say that that was going to be in the October 2024 version, that the Shun Valley will be added, and that will increase the price of the product as he adds that in, which means the earlier you buy it, the more stuff you're going to get for the same amount of money. So you want to pick it up, but you can, you know, even if you get it later, you're going to get a lot of stuff. One warning that he gave me, and I think he mentioned this to his patrons as well. Raging Swan runs an excellent, excellent Patreon as well. I will link to the Patreon. You can get tons and tons of other material. Raging Swan makes tons and tons of stuff. I'm only focusing on Shadowed Keep, but they make tons of really cool stuff. The Dread Thingonomicon, the Dread Laironomicon, lots and lots of cool accessories to help you run your games. And on the Patreon, it's like every week you're getting new, like one or two page guides of random tables to add things to your game. But in that, he talked about that you probably don't want to get the print on demand version until later this year because it's going to go into a hardcover version that includes the Valley of the Three Tombs inside the same book. So stick to the PDF for now, and then later this year, and I'll probably do another little pitch back then to remind everybody of it. But I mean, unless you don't mind having a paper version, because I think it's pretty cheap. It's not the print on demand version actually isn't available right now, but I think getting the print on demand and PDF together was pretty inexpensive. So, you know, if you want one right now, I have a paper copy and I don't regret having a paper copy. I will probably buy the new version when the new version comes out. But if you want to hang on and you don't want to have multiple paper copies that are where one is more up to date than the other, you probably want to wait till later this year to buy a physical version of the book because you will get the Valley of the Three Tombs. And I think there'll be a hardcover version as well. So that's really neat. So what? Why do we care so much? Why am I so excited about this adventure? Well, I have found this adventure to be really, really fun and easy to use at my table, even though my version of this, when I ran it, went completely off the rails, completely away from the central storyline of this adventure, almost from the very beginning. And yet I still find lots of useful material in this adventure, regardless of the fact that my game is way off the track. And to give you an idea of how far off the track it is, this is like a level 1 to 4 adventure, and my characters are 6th level and are now just getting to the Shadowed Keep. But it's totally cool. And I explained this to them yesterday. They said, like, because I mentioned, like, hey, you actually got to the Shadowed Keep, part of our Shadowed Keep of the event, Shadowed Keep of the Borderlands adventure. And they go, wasn't this adventure for like 1st to 4th level? And I'm like, yes. And they go, is it going to be really easy? And I'm like, no, because lots of things have happened in the keep while you were gone. And they were like, so they said, like, oh, I think you just beefed up all the monsters. I'm like, no, I didn't just beef up all the monsters. The situation changed and things have changed. And the, you know, I said, you remember that bandit camp that where now they're all your friends and like you're helping them all? Those are the people who were occupying this place before, and they got kicked out because the cult of the Black Harbinger took it over along with their Iron Drake mercenaries. So I said, those, now it's harder because of the situation changing, not because I just beefed up the monsters. But that's the kind of thing you can do. And with a good flexible adventure, you can change it a lot and still find value in the original set of the adventure. And that's what I'm finding, that to me, a definition of a good adventure is one where I can change lots of stuff, but I don't have to. And this one hits it on the head. I really feel like I could have run this adventure straight out as it was written, or I can use it as sort of a loose guide for a campaign, and I can change tons of stuff in it and still feel like I got good value out of the adventure. And that I think this one hits it more than almost any adventure I can think of, especially for like the price point and for the simplicity of the adventure. It is just an outstanding adventure that makes it really easy for you to pick up and run and modify to fit the kind of adventure you want to run. So what do you get? You actually get quite a bit in this adventure. It's more than just kind of your standard fare, sort of 16 or 32 page adventure. You get a whole lot of stuff in it. We're just looking at the table of contents here. So you get your whole adventure background, how this adventure starts, what's going on here. Then there's a big section on the town of Dulwich. So you get a great big starter, sort of a, you know, right between like a hamlet, I guess. It's sort of between a town and a city. It's pretty big. It's got a lot going on, and it's got a lot of interesting things that are happening in the city. It's got a lot of different factions, and early on in the game, I definitely used these factions against each other. I had these different groups, but I also had this larger storyline that I wanted to wrap around in it. And later on, I'll talk about what the storyline is that I sort of wrapped around this whole thing. But I could still use all the NPCs. I could still use a lot of the material that was in here to act as a scaffold for the wrapper that I was putting around. That worked really well. So a really good section. You can see, like, starts on page 11 and ends on page 50. So you get 39 pages just about the town of Dulwich, a really good starter, really good starter town. Then there's a whole section from page 53 to 50 about the surrounds. What are all of the locations that are around in between the town of Dulwich and the Shadowed Keep, are other places. I use this a lot. Actually, this section on the surrounds was one where I grabbed onto the concepts of it and then blew them out into bigger side quests, bigger adventures on their own. Again, I relied very heavily on Dyson Logos maps to kind of fill in these locations and go. And that's why the characters hit like 6th level before they even made it to the Shadowed Keep, was going off on these other adventures, these other things that were happening in the area. So that's a really cool page. And then you have the Shadowed Keep itself and what's going on here. And it is sort of like what they call like a killer dungeon, right? So you have like the regular dungeon, you have a mega dungeon, which is like 28 levels deep. And then you have what they call a Kilo Dungeon, K-I-L-O, a Kilo Dungeon. And a Kilo Dungeon is like, it's multi-level, the levels interconnect, the characters will kind of go up and down, they'll go in and they'll come back, they'll go in and they'll go in, do some stuff, leave, come back, things will change, things will evolve. So, and that's sort of what exists under the Shadow Keep. It's actually, it's a really, really good size for a usable but complicated dungeon. Too many levels and it's just, you know, really hard to manage. Too few levels and it's, you're going to happen very quickly and happen pretty, you know, be kind of boring. This one I found has a lot of really interesting interconnections between various layers, different factions who are running particular layers, how to get around in these things, but still be small enough to be usable overall. So the bulk of the adventure from like page 60 to 95 covers the Shadowed Keep itself, what's going on in there. And then there's a bunch of handouts from page 97 to 119, about 20 pages of various appendices. That this includes like the stat blocks for various creatures. This includes artwork or handouts that you can give to your players. Lots of really cool stuff that you can pick up in this adventure. One thing that makes this adventure really unique is how much it has reference kind of stuff in it. And I'm going to skip around a bit, but an example is if we look at the town of Dulwich, right? Which is a really cool town. Lots going on here. Just, again, everything is almost exactly the right. I mean, almost exactly sounds like I'm qualifying it. It's almost, I mean, it feels like it's exactly the right size. That Dulwich is big enough that you can have lots of interesting interconnections with NPCs and locations and things that are going on there, but not so big that you get lost. This isn't Waterdeep, but it's also not just like a small town with like, you know, three locations. It's got a big, beefy amount of locations, but not so many that you get totally lost. It's more like having a district in a large city. But I find that really useful. And you can see, like, off the bat, you get, you know, 2d8 events that can occur. That means the bell curve is going to pull you towards the middle. But you could have lots of different kind of events that occur while the characters are going on. I always like this stuff. And this is something that Raging Swan in particular does well. Now, this is where I really feel like this product is different than the typical products that we get. Are the brief, the locations in brief, notable locations in brief, that you have a one-page guide that shows you all of the different locations with just like a one-sentence description of what's there. So there's definitely more. Like when you dive in, there's a whole thing about the different factions and there's location descriptions for each of these locations. But instead of that being the only thing, you have one page. And you could actually print this page out, and I would recommend printing this page out for your own notes, that describes all of the locations there with a one-sentence description and all of the notable NPCs and their side. And when you have this page in front of you, you have one reference page you can use during the game to help you keep track of what's going on when the characters are going from place to place. That is really powerful. And it's not only done just here for Dulwich, it's also done for the Shadowed Keep, that the Shadowed Keep itself also has brief descriptions of what all the rooms and locations are. And it just makes it so much more usable. Now, the neat thing is it does both. So if you're like, yeah, that's not enough for me to really understand what's going on at this place, you can dive in and you can read the locations even more so and dive in during your prep or while you're just reading the adventure. And then this acts as a little catalyst for your head to go, oh, that's right. This is where that creepy dude is or whatever. You have this sort of connection. Or I don't remember this. And then you can dive in and reach it. So I find the referencing, this reference thing is, I think, something that really sets this apart other adventures that I've run. Most of the time, people do not bother digging into having these kind of brief references. I was heavily inspired by this and did a very similar thing in the City of Arches source book. So when we get to the City of Arches, patrons have it right now, but one of the things I did in there was made sure that whenever I had a location, I had exactly like this, locations in brief, one-line descriptions of each of the locations that are blown up later in the book or in another part of the book, but you have like one page that talks about that one thing to make it really usable. If you are an adventure designer, consider this. Consider giving the one-page reference for your NPCs in your locations. It's really outstanding. Dulwich is a really cool place. The map is really neat. I think the map is really cool. And my players, when they were running through it, really enjoyed it. They had a lot of adventures that were here. It was really neat. One of the things I did is I added sewers. I think like good cities should always have sewers. I can't remember if the sewers are actually in here or not, but I was like, we definitely want to have like a sewer, you know, sewer exits, because you can have that way you have adventures that are right under the city. The sewers can expand. So you're like, hey, it's just Dulwich, but it's got basically an infinite level dungeon beneath it as well. So there's a lot of adventures that can take place here in the city overland, but it's also kind of neat to have a sewer thing as well. I just did that by grabbing a Dyson map that fit and then wrote in my own locations about what was going on in the sewers and ran some adventures that way. So you can always expand it out. Again, that gives you that feeling of being able to expand out the location with things that you want to add that you kind of dig. I always think it's kind of fun to have sewers beneath. So it's pretty good. Really fun factions. So you have different thieves guilds that are operating here. The shadow spiders and the black cats, and they have different ways that they operate and different ways that the characters might collide with them or work one of them against the other, or all kinds of things. You could do your sort of, you know, Fistful of Dollars style game where the characters are working both two different sides against each other. But then there's other groups and other, the nice thing is it's not just a nice town where everything is going perfectly. There's evil things happening. There's zombies coming out of the graveyard nearby. There's two different thieves guilds. There's an assassin who's, you know, murdering people. There's interesting things happening in the city that the characters can get involved in that really don't even have to have them go out to the Shadowed Keep itself. So it really makes it, the Shadowed Keep, we call it an adventure, but it's really kind of a campaign setting, a campaign adventure. It's kind of a mini campaign adventure, right? Because there's a lot of ways to expand this out into different things. Again, notable streets, one page that shows all of the different streets that could be going on so that as the characters are going from one place to the other, you can look up the street. If we look at the map, you can see that on the street, it says Broad Street right here. So if you want to kind of fill out the descriptions while they're going from place to place, you can look and say, oh, well, you're going, you know, as you go from area 2 to area 12, you go to Percho Street, right? And you're just making your way along Percho Street. And you can go down to your streets and you can look up Percho Street. First piece of the Temple of Khan is celebrated on this street with numerous small shrines. So you can describe this, right? Hey, you almost read this out loud. You know, as you walk down the streets, you see all these small shrines, including the Temple of Khan, right? So that is kind of a really neat thing that you can really gives you a good way to fill it out. Again, super easy to use at the table, super rich, super thick, super easy to use, really built for GMs to run games, more so than I think I've seen almost any adventure that I can recall. Whole different downtime session, buying and selling magic items, different carousing options. This is cool, kind of right out of Shadow Dark style. What do the characters want to do? There's a bunch of adventure hooks, right? What are these hooks? And you have these like Grave Matters, Defeat the Spiders, New Spiders, Mercenary Guards. These are different little that are going on inside the town itself. Oh, and those are kind of the results of carousing. You may hear about the various adventure hooks that are going on. And I dropped a handful of these. Again, you can read through and decide which adventure hooks you think are really going to work well. You can grab those and run with them. Many of these locations have been more expanded than they were in the original version. So you have new, like, who are the people wandering around in various locations beyond just a single person? Things that might be going on in any of these locations. This has, like, lists of the kinds of things that are for sale when you go to different places. So that's pretty neat. So far more expansion on the locations, which is good. It would be bad if it didn't have that reference page. But because it has the reference page, it gives you enough information that if you really don't need a full page about the Dancing Bear, you can just grab onto the reference page and run with it. But if you have the full one and you want to dig into it, now you have these other things. Who are the notable folks? And look, this is very easily referenced, right? It's not just paragraphs of text. It's talking about who the people are. It's talking about all that kind of stuff. Obviously spent a fair bit of time in the Dancing Bear because that's kind of the big adventure tavern slash inn where things may be going on, and there's lots of options for things that are happening there. It looks like a lot of the places now have these like two-page spreads for the location itself. So pretty rich expansion of characters, situations, opportunities, whispers and rumors, lots of things happening at each of these places. That's really cool. This bigger expansion was not out in the version that I ran when I first went there. I hope that my characters go back to Dulwich and I can use some of this stuff, but we will see. This is pretty interesting. Cemetery by day and by night. And what's going on here? The cemetery definitely has some kind of like interesting things that are happening. Shambling dead, right? Undead are wandering around the cemetery at night because why wouldn't they? So that's really neat, really good expansion. And I'm really just seeing this kind of for the first time while I'm talking, that that expansion has, you know, a lot of extra material that's going on here. So again, this version that I'm looking at is the early 2024 edition release, which will be available by the time you're seeing this video. This whole kind of adventure, mini campaign adventure, operates in the Duchy of Ashlar, which is sort of a campaign setting that Raging Swan has set up for this. Other adventures that Raging Swan sells kind of connect to other pieces of this. One of my mistakes when I ran my campaign is I said, you know what'd be fun is running this in Greyhawk. I wish I hadn't done that. I wish I had just used the campaign setting that's here because it's good enough for all of the adventures that are going on here. You can always add anything that you want to add into it, but rather than trying to shoehorn this into Greyhawk, which I thought might be fun, it really ended up not being a big deal. And it just made things more complicated for me than they needed to be. The whole Duchy of Ashlar gives you lots of things. And again, all of these locations, either you can go and find supplements that talk about these locations, or you can fill them out yourself. What's the Black Tower? You get to decide what the Black Tower is. You can decide how you want to expand it. So really neat way of kind of giving you a mini campaign setting, a mini area for you to be able to run this whole adventure in. That has tons of room for expansions in any way that you want to take it. About halfway through the guide, we get to the surrounding woodlands, all of the different things that can exist in and around the PDF, or in and around the locations while they're exploring about. And again, you have sort of your encounters, events, or discovery tables, as we would expect from Raging Swan. Lots of really great random tables. Lots of descriptions of these various locations, the Shun Valley, the Three Tombs, the Demon's Bowl. I actually ran a lot of adventures in these locations, but I took the concept of the Demon's Bowl and just changed it to fit what I wanted and what I needed. I ran a large part of my adventure happened in this place called the Demon's Bowl, but I sort of reflavored it around the whole campaign that I wanted to run. Same way, like Shun Valley of the Three Tombs, you could go use the Shun Valley of the Three Tombs adventure, or you can decide what that means to you and build your own kind of version of what the Shun Valley is like, or why that's going on, or how that fits. Von Geith, a dwarven ruin that was once taken over by a pair of dragons, is still out there. You get to decide, hey, do I want to expand that into a whole separate kind of adventure campaign? So it's really neat to kind of give you these sort of ideas about what are in these various locations that you can either grab and run with and just build your own adventures around, or if Raging Swan sells it, you can go find different adventures that you can plop into these locations to fill this whole thing out. So, yes, and Shun Valley of the Three Tombs is actually going to be added to the Shadowed Keep of the Borderlands later this year. So I think it's going to be in the October-ish timeframe. The starter adventure of Shun Valley of the Three Tombs will be included as part of the Shadowed Keep of the Borderlands PDF. Again, if you own it, even if you bought it now, later on, you'll be able to download the new version that has that in there. Also, if you want it right now, it's $5. You can go pick up Shun Valley of the Three Tombs. I picked it up. I have it right here. I picked it up and liked it. I actually decided to change. I don't think my characters ever went to the Shun Valley of the Three Tombs. It was an option for them. But the one thing I'll say is that the Shun Valley of the Three Tombs has a lot of information that is also in Shadowed Keep. So it's 38 pages long, but like it includes the Dulwich map. It includes like a brief version of what's going on inside Dulwich. And then has the Shun Valley itself. So you're kind of getting a lot of material. I think that's one of the reasons why this is getting brought into the Shadowed Keep PDF, is that about half of this can exist in just Shadowed Keep. Half of what is inside the Shun Valley adventure is actually also in the Shadowed Keep, and people are buying both, and why not just put it in one product? Again, this kind of cool idea of lore, like rollable checks for lore to learn what's going on here. Very usable, very easy to kind of drop into your game. I really like that kind of thing. And again, like you can read about what's going on in a location, decide, well, actually, for my sake, I'm going to change things slightly, and you could just do it. So it's not a matter of one of the things when I look at an adventure and I say, like, does this not work? Well, the nice thing is this adventure is loose enough that, you know, it's generally going to work. But you might decide you want to change something for your own campaign, and that's totally cool, right? That's a fine way to use an adventure. It's when you buy an adventure and you feel like, well, I can't run this as written. Something in the storyline is not working right. Something is just hanging on too tight. This is a very loosely written adventure, right? It doesn't have a big main story arc that the characters are going through. It's not this written narrative. Instead, it's a whole bunch of locations and situations and groups and collisions and how they all collide, and you get to decide how you're going to use it. And I find that flexibility incredibly useful and incredibly refreshing when I'm running my own campaigns. It's just something I really, really like. Then about halfway through, we get to the Shadowed Keep itself. I mentioned that the Shadowed Keep is a multi-level dungeon with lots of stuff going on. It can take a little bit of effort to kind of figure out how all of these things interconnect. And sometimes you may want to create some interconnections that don't actually exist. And sometimes those interconnections can be a little tricky to figure out while you're looking at it. So the Aboveland, and again, the influence for this was very clearly the Village of Homlet and the ruins of the Village of Homlet, the original H1 adventure from D&D long ago. This one looks very much like those ruins that exist there, but are filled out and I think modernized for what we know about how to write good adventures and how to run good adventures. So, you know, main door going in, but then two kind of big areas. You have the watchtower on the right, which is taken over by the Bandit Queen. And then you have this large structure, the sort of Tetris shaped L on the northwestern side that contains a couple of the different levels that are going on there. It can be ruined. You can deal with the brigands as they're coming in. In my game, the brigands actually got routed by somebody else, and the characters became allies with the brigands. And again, you can sort of figure out how to do that. Different groups, the Blood Moon Warriors, which are goblins that are fighting the brigands themselves. So you have this collision of groups that are happening inside of it, and then you can sort of manipulate that. You can decide how you want to do it. And I like this customizing events. You'll know how fast your players are likely to explore the Shadow Keep. If your players are the type to cautiously explore, you might want to slow down the pace of events, because it does have this sort of events going on the different days. That way the whole place is sort of a living place. I didn't use this because in mine they were past like day 40 by the time we got here, and so a whole different kind of groups of things had occurred. But it's very cool to, like, how does this place evolve over time? As the characters are doing things, how does the situation in the world react? I think is a really neat way. These character triggered events, like, what are the things that can occur? You have rival adventurers, you have, you know, all kinds of different things that can occur while the characters are going on there. Again, we have this like watchtower key, right? Which shows a very fast, you know, here are 8 descriptions of the things that are in the following map. So you can look at the map. The maps are really good too. The artwork for the maps, I really, really like the style a lot. And all of the descriptions for this whole 5-level map is available right on the watchtower key, right? You have a description of all of the locations right in that little key. Really, really cool. Then, of course, it dives in deeper. So you could just use the key. And especially in my case, because things had changed so much, I generally use the key. I didn't worry about the longer descriptions of it. But you have these longer descriptions about the different groups that are there. Who's there? What are they doing? How things change? There's like, you know, as the characters deal with it, what happens? What, you know, how do they react? All that sort of stuff is going on. So that is the watchtower. One interesting thing about this place is if you look, there's a little stream underneath that says to the realm of the blood moon. So it means that the well in W2, in area W2 of the watchtower, actually leads to one of the lower sections of one of the other maps. Something that I added, which I think works really well, is you notice that the stream actually follows out to the south. I was like, well, where does that exit? And does that mean there's another way into the Shadowed Keep beyond going into the front door? Could the characters wander around the outside and find an old creek and see a tunnel that goes in there? And then what's in the tunnel? And I had like a sinkhole with like nasty monsters in it. And I had edder caps that are chasing the characters and kind of other things. My characters had the choice of like, do we want to go in the front? Do we want to cause a distraction at the front and try to sneak over the back? Do we want to go in the tunnel or some kind of variation of it? They ended up deciding after a couple of sessions that they wanted to go in the tunnel and follow the tunnel underneath the watchtower and then come up through the watchtower from below, which is what they did in the game. Actually, that just happened last night. So that's pretty neat. And the idea that that is sort of a cross-cutting thing, that is a very sort of Janelle Jacques style way of cutting across different dungeons in different ways so that there are multiple paths, secret paths, different elevation changes that can be used so that the maps are really fun and exciting and interesting. Again, we have the ruined donjon, which is that main sort of L-shaped area. And again, you have the key that is a very quick reference to tell you the things that are in this. It's got random encounters if you want to roll some random encounters. Very usable. That summary, I can't describe just how useful this summary of locations is when you're running it at the table. Something very few adventures do, and I think they all should. I would find adventures far more usable if we did that. We do get into some of the complications of how the locations are stacked together. For example, you have sort of the D1 through D16 is the L-shaped thing plus the watchtower that is above the L-shaped thing. And then you have this D14 and 15 is a secret passage. I'm actually using this as a big piece of my adventure. It's going to be one of the last places they can actually get to, or you know, find and get to, because that's where, in my version of the game, that's where the main key is that they're trying to get a hold of while they go to this place. But you may need to bring a little bit of your own story to the adventure in order to drive the motivations for the characters to go to different places. So the adventure itself is, like I said, a relatively loose written adventure where it's mostly about the location and the situation and what's going on there. But why the characters want to go from one area to another could be something that you're going to want to draw in. In my case, I have an overarching story that is bringing the characters to these places to go do these things. And I have 2 MacGuffins that exist inside this place that they need to acquire. And one of them is going to be very hard for them to acquire. They know that another evil group is trying to also acquire the same thing. So that means they need to get it before the other group does. That's actually a key, an artificer key. We have dungeon dressing. So, you know, if you wanted minor points of interest as desired, you can roll on this and kind of drop it in. This comes right out of like the Dread Thingonomicon. Descriptions of all the chambers that are in that main section. Nice pieces of artwork too. This is like, feels like Tomb of Horrors or the old school adventures. We had these black and white handouts that you could show to your players so they could see what the room is like when they go into it. I think that's really cool. Some of the artwork is just outstanding. This one too, the demon door, right? Really, really scary demon door place. with the lost treasure of the Iron Wolves, right? Big, powerful traps, guardians, all kinds of things that are going on here. You get to fight a necrophidius, who looks like a bone naga. Then you get into the realm of the Blood Moon. This is a level lower. So if we go to our main map here, you will see that they get in through D1, but there's a stairwell to D4. The interesting thing is the stairwells in this place actually let you navigate much of the location without having to go to too many rooms. So the stairwell to go down another level is actually right at the front door. It gives a lot of options for how the characters are going to explore this place, which can be a little bit scary because you're like, do I want them to go all the way down deep right away? But they might. And so, yeah, they have, and you'll see it here too. So you could go to D1 to D2, the stairwell, then that one down, right down to M1, and then there's a down to the Undercroft and that, or the Undercrypt, and that takes you right down to another location right below. So you can see that another stairwell that leads straight from the dungeon down to the Undercrypt. So you can actually cover sort of like 3 to 4 levels in just a couple of rooms. And that can be a little tricky because if you expect the dungeon and how the dungeon is being navigated, how the characters navigate the dungeon by more in a linear nature, that might not be the case in this. That there's lots of different places to explore. So if you want the characters to explore lots of places, you might have to decide, like, what are some of the keys? What are some of the MacGuffins that you want to drop in different places to? And then the rumors about where they are so that the characters will actually explore all of these places, because too much and then they might just go straight to the bottom or whatever. So lots of different places. But again, you get to that where, like, one of the main treasure vaults is actually on the first floor. It's not even in these lower two floors. So that's the realm of the Blood Moon, which is where the Blood Moon goblins are hanging out. And then you go to the lowest level. This is Vongeith. So we have this kind of fun side view map of the dwarven ruins of Vongeith. If you want to have a whole other set of adventures, it'd be kind of fun. The Undercrypt is the lowest level down here. Scary things, lots of undead, skeletons, shadows, all sorts of things that are going on down here. So this gives you, there's a big pit trap. There's lots of other things here. And this is where I dropped my second MacGuffin. So I had one MacGuffin that's down here in U6 and then another one that's up above. When I talk about how I've changed this campaign to fit my own setting, I'll explain a little bit more about that. So you have that location as well. Further adventures, discussion of where you want to take it. It talks about Vongeith as one of the locations. That might be a fun one. I don't know. Maybe I'll add that in. I don't know. Our characters are going to be pretty high level by the time we get there. So I'd have to have something significantly different. And appendices and player's handout. Somebody asked, like, what's the difference between the Pathfinder OSR and the 5e version? And it all really has to do with this. I think some of the DCs and some of the places are all changing based on the game that you're running, but also the denizens are going to have stat blocks for different ones. One thing that I found is, like, I kind of bring my own stat blocks to an adventure. I really don't need stat blocks in an adventure because a lot of times I'm not running it at the exact same level that the adventure is running at, or I want to add some of my own monsters or whatever. So I find it useful that the monster name is there, so I know what kind of monster might be there, and then I could just pull it out of my whatever my monster book is. But it doesn't hurt to have the list of them if you plan on running it more as written and you want to have your stat blocks for those for the specific creatures you can. Otherwise, the stat blocks are referenced from the system resource document or from the monster manual, and you could probably use the Monstrous Menagerie. I would recommend using the Monstrous Menagerie to fill in monsters for this, because I love the monsters. Level Up Advanced 5e's Monstrous Menagerie is my favorite 5e monster book. More dungeon denizens. So these are all kind of broken out by location. There's that necrophidius, the undead, and level, the CR4 is not going to challenge my characters right now. So obviously I'm going to be changing that quite a bit, making something really nasty. The Watchtower denizens are there. So pretty handy to have all the stat blocks that you need in one place if you like that. Sure, why not? I don't need them because, again, my characters came here so much higher level that I don't really need the stat blocks. I don't really plan on using the stat blocks in there, but they're there. This is cool. A player's guide to Dulwich. So you can actually print this out and hand this to people so that, and this is not going to have any of the secret stuff that's going on. Valto Ikeo, Valto has a secret, but it's not in here. And that's really cool. Town of Dulwich, your dead or alive posters that you can hand out to people, hand-drawn maps of the area and all that kind of stuff. Really, really cool. So how did I change the adventure? So let me talk about how I actually used it. First of all, if it wasn't clear, you should totally buy Shattered Keep of the Borderlands. It is an excellent, excellent, excellent adventure. I just love it. I've been really lucky to be able to play it and run it and use it. And I would probably do so again. I think I would. What's interesting is the way that I've run it, I would run it again differently with a different group. I would run it again. I would definitely run it again. I really, really like it. So what did I do with it though? Well, I have a campaign idea that has been kicking around in my head for a long time. And I said, now would be a fun, because it's Greyhawk. I set mine in Greyhawk. I wish I hadn't, but I did. But even if I didn't, I would still use Greyhawk-y kind of things, right? You could still kind of include your own sort of version of Greyhawk if you wanted to. And that means kind of the old school demon princes and stuff like that. And I've had this storyline idea in my head for a while that I've really wanted to run, and I'm running it now. And if any of the players in my Shadowed Keep group are listening to this, please stop listening, because I don't want you to be spoiled, because there's a pretty big spoiler that's going on. So in my version of the game, there is a place known as the Black Cathedral. I actually stole this right out of Twin Peaks with the Black Lodge, sort of this metaphysical evil location that exists. And it's the antithesis of the cathedral that's inside Dulwich. Dulwich has this like totally overblown cathedral that's going on there, where tons of money went into it. But I felt like, wouldn't it be neat if there was an antithesis of that, that's somewhere in the area, this really ancient evil temple called the Black Cathedral. And I was like, and there's like terrible stuff going on there. So what are the terrible things? Well, in over the course of the campaign, it's come out that the Black Cathedral is actually a gateway to the abyss. But which layer of the abyss can actually change? So depending on who gets control over the Black Cathedral, they will be able to open up a portal to their layer of the abyss. And there are three groups that are fighting each other to try to get control over the Black Cathedral and trying to open the doorway to their layer of the abyss. One of those groups is known as the Cult of the Black Harbingers. One of them is known as the Cult of the Black Harbingers. It has come out during the course of the campaign that the Cult of the Black Harbingers are in fact cultists of Orcus, and that they want to open up a gateway to the realm of Thanatos to bring Orcus. So the cult is very big into undead. They just fought a cult high priest recently, a high priest member of the cult who was an Oni. He was like a powerful Oni that was summoning lots of undead. And the Cult of the Black Harbinger has taken over the Shadowed Keep itself. So they're in the Shadowed Keep. They're trying to find a key down there and so on. There is another cult called the Cult of the... I get my cults confused. So there's three cults that they're dealing with. The Cult of Black Harbinger, which are undead worshippers of Orcus. So the Cult of the Eater of Worlds is another cult. And they are mostly goblinoid. Mostly goblinoid, but they have some kind of weird thing where they're also sort of like, you know, they have sort of like see-through transparent skin and sort of watery, slimy bodies and stuff like that, and tentacles and stuff like that. Their symbol is like a skull being wrapped up with tentacles, and they're known as the Eater of Worlds. And then the third cult is the Cult of the Dead Knight, and they're very sly, and they deal a lot with poisons and hallucinogens. And they're very, very careful. There's not as many of them, and they want to get control as well, but they're very, very smart. And so you have these three cults, the Black Harbingers, the Eater of Worlds, and the Dead Knight. And all of them are kind of working against each other. And for a long time, the Eater of Worlds and the Black Harbingers were at war directly with each other, because both of them are like overt, chaos-y sort of cults smashing against each other. So in the Shadowed Keep, the Cult of the Black Harbingers are trying to break in, but the goblinoid cults, which the Blood Moon cultists turned in, or the Blood Moon goblins turned into these, to the Cult of the Eater of Worlds. The Eater of Worlds is down there already. They kind of occupy the area, and they found beneath the Shadowed Keep an obelisk. And the obelisk is one of several obelisks that are all around the area, the larger area, that are sort of keys to finding the Black Cathedral. That if you can activate them and keep them active, you can triangulate the location of the Black Cathedral, and then you can figure out where it is. Right now in my head, the Black Cathedral is actually underneath Dulwich. That if you go deeper beneath the city of Dulwich, it's down there. But I may move it. I may move it to that dwarven place, for example. It might be a kind of a neat place for it to be. But they've been working with these obelisks, and one of the obelisks is beneath the Shadowed Keep. That's the one that I have in that lowest level in that big pool area. And the thing about the obelisks, so they've been there for like millennia. They've been there longer than all the creatures around them. They've been buried under the ground, and the cults have been able to draw them up out of the ground and then use them to try and go into position of the Black Cathedral. So that's something else. Well, so here's the big secret. So we know that Orcus is the demon prince in charge of the Black Harbingers. The Eater of Worlds is actually following a demon prince known as Hethridea. And then the Dead Knight, their demon prince is Amuel. So anybody who is aware of who Hethradia or Amuel are, know that they are the two heads of Demogorgon. So there are two cults operating against each other that are operating on behalf of one of the two heads of Demogorgon. One of the heads is super smart. One of the heads is really chaotic and crazy. Both of them have managed to reach out to separate cults because they want to get power over the other. And so you have three cults, but two of them are coming from one creature. Now, the characters learned that their two of the cults are actually operating from one creature, but they don't know who the creature is. But the other day, they fought an Etten. And the Etten, the two heads of the Etten were fighting and stuff like that. And they managed to kill one of the Etten heads. And the other Etten head was like, no, wait, don't kill me. I'm actually undercover. And they're like, what do you mean? He goes, I'm undercover. My brother head here, we had a way to put him to sleep, but I'm actually work for a different group. And they found out that that head worked for the Dead Knight. So that means the two Etten heads, one of them was an Eater of Worlds head and the other one was a Dead Knight head, but they were two heads of the same body. And the characters learned that. And I'm hoping they'll realize like one day, like that was a big clue that actually the creature they're dealing with is the same way. It's two heads of the one big body. So I really liked that idea that you have three cults operating, but two of them are actually the two separate heads of Demogorgon. And I don't know how that's going to play out, but that's definitely something that's been going on. So it's been lots of fun. So in my version of the game, the cult of the Black Harbingers with all of their undead stormed the Shadowed Keep. The bandits who were there, the Firebrand bandits, were kicked out and they made a camp away, but they were continually getting harassed by undead. And the characters, one of the characters actually knew the leader, the bandit leader. She was an elf who had escaped from the same elven empire that one of the characters did to avoid being betrothed against their will to another rival elven group. And so she's like, oh, I've had posters of you on my wall. You're really cool. And so the bandits are now on their side. But the keep has been overtaken by undead, Black Harbinger cultists, and down below are cultists of the Eaters of Worlds. So, Eater of Worlds. And so that means they're more powerful, right? That means there's bigger undead. There's these cult leaders with their stuff going on. And there's lots of different groups that are going on there. So that means many of the situations and monsters inside the Shadowed Keep have changed a lot. Now, another thing, my wife's character, Voxie, is an artificer. And I thought, wouldn't it be neat if the obelisks weren't just typical magical obelisks, but are actually artifacts from like an artificer style. They're almost mechanical. They're almost weird machines, like ancient and powerful machines, and they can be activated with this device that's called like a key. So she has a great uncle named Uncle Fiddlegibble, who was a gnome artificer himself, and he found this key and he's like, holy cow, this key could open up really bad places. We need to hide it. So he hid it in the vault. He and his friend Valentine Ironwolf, who's the guy who created the Shadow Keep, created a separate vault protected by really powerful stuff and put the key in there. Well, the key is like a +2 artificer artifact that the characters can get. So she'll get a magic item when she gets it eventually. But the key is that the situation is that the Black Harbinger is trying to find the key. They don't know where it is, but the characters could go in and find it. And then the key could either activate or deactivate obelisks. So that could be a thing. But with the key in hand, they can learn where the Black Cathedral is. And the main bad guy is also going to learn where the Black Cathedral is. And so there's going to be this big final confrontation at the Black Cathedral. But I think it might be fun if I want to extend the campaign further. I don't know if I do or not. I could either have the Black Cathedral be like a big underground chamber underneath the town, or it could be in this dwarven ruin. If I want to extend the adventure out a little bit, we could do that. So that could be fun. So that's how I've been using Shadow Keep of the Borderlands. And again, like I've run tons and tons of dozens and dozens of different campaign adventures over the past like 10 or 15 years. I've run many more before that, but just in the fifth edition era, over the past 10 years, I've run more than 24 campaigns using a bunch of different campaign adventure types. And Shadow Keep of the Borderlands is really, really high on that list of excellent products that have helped me run the kind of campaign I want to run. I highly recommend you pick it up. It is a great time to pick it up. This week, a new version is coming out that's going to have all the extended stuff that I showed. Later this year, they're going to expand it even further by adding in like starter adventures and making a new hardcover version. But you can buy the PDF now and you can get those updates later. And you can also, then you can pick up the physical version later. You can pick up the physical version now too. It's up to you and get that. But it's an absolutely outstanding adventure and one that I highly, highly recommend. I hope you enjoyed this video. If you did and you like to see more stuff from this like me, please consider subscribing to the Sly Flourish newsletter. It is absolutely free to sign up. You get an adventure generator for signing up and you get a weekly RPG-related email with links to all of the work that I do in the same newsletter every week. You can also support me directly on Patreon. Patrons get access to a dedicated Discord server, the monthly Q&A, the City of Arches sourcebook, Uncovered Secrets Volume 1 and 2, whole bunch of tools to help you run your games, lots and lots of stuff that you get for becoming a patron of Sly Flourish. And you can pick up any of my books, including Return of the Lazy Dungeon Master, The Lazy DM's Workbook, Lazy DM's Companion, Forge of Foes, and my own fantastic adventure books, all available in the Sly Flourish bookstore. Thank you all so much. Have a great day, and get out there and play an RPG.